Okay, welcome back. I have a little piece of business to take care of here. Don wrote to me, Donald Jeffries, and he said, hi, Jeff, I totally forgot to mention that I'll be meeting up with John Barber tomorrow in Washington, D.C., where his film about attorney William Pepper will be shown at American University. Maybe you can mention that on the air, and hopefully John is listening. If you do, please say that I am very sorry for forgetting to mention it. But it's mentioned, so there you go. If you're in D.C. and can get to American University, that was the site of JFK's last big speech, I think, you can meet John there. He'll be there. And Don, too, and see his film. That was just a sparkling documentary about William Pepper. Couldn't have been any better. If you don't know who William Pepper is, you really need to take a look at that. All right, here we go. Off to the races. Allegedly, President Erdogan of Turkey has told the Jews in Israel that he is going to invade Israel if they don't stop massacring humanity in Gaza. And that's a big deal. And for all of you out there who don't know yet, the reason the Arab countries, I'm not an expert, I don't have the inside information, but I can tell you right now that the primary reason Arab nations have not gotten together and either invaded Israel or stopped this genocide is because they would get nuked. It's simple. You want to come on in, Mr. Erdogan? Bring your army? What? Fine. Say goodbye to your capital city. Say goodbye to your industrial centers. We'll nuke the shit out of you. Or whatever word they have for that in Arabic. It's not a good situation, and it's not going to get better. Now, Scott Ritter said today that Zionism is finished. He said that ideology didn't work. He said, well, it did work for a long time. But he said it's over. It's done. And Israel is in all likelihood going to be destroyed. And that's Scott Ritter. I have that up in headline somewhere. You'll see it. So let's find out with Mitchell Henderson how he sees the Turkish threat to Israel. They could overrun Israel. They have the army to do it. They're a NATO member on top of that. Don't forget that. But it's the nuclear issue, the Samson option, that's keeping Turkey out of the game and safe right now. Will that stay? Will that remain? We'll see. Hello, Mitch.
Hello. Well, you know, your explanation of why the Arab countries will not get involved is actually spot on. You know, it is just that simple. It's that they will be nuked if they invade. So in my past programs, I've explained this by saying that the United States has military bases in all these countries, who the last thing that they would ever want is a U.S. military base in their country. But right. They have them, because as long as there's an American military base in their country, Israel will not nuke them. Okay? And what they get restrained from doing by this, by having U.S. bases there, is they also cannot attack Israel. So Americans will have bases there as long as they don't attack Israel. Israel will not nuke them as long as American military bases are there. Okay, but this is an implicit deal between the Arabs and the Americans and the Israelis. This is the shakedown. This is a protection racket is what it is. Okay, now some countries are not necessarily too crazy about that. For example, Iraq is seriously thinking about kicking the Americans out. They don't care about Israel and their nukes. They will fall under Iran-Russia nuclear umbrella. Okay, so they're actually very serious about wanting to get rid of us in their country. Okay, we do nothing but kill their people anyway and disregard any of their wishes, so why would they want us there? So Turkey's a different situation because, one, Turkey is NATO. It does make a difference in that Turkey, because it's in NATO, is not a part of the Arab blackmail that the United States is doing. The United States does have bases in Turkey, As a matter of fact, we have nuclear weapons stored in Turkey, okay, and in Sirleaf Air Force Base. I think we have, I think it's like 61 B-51 bombs, gravity bombs, something like that, in Sirleaf. I can't remember the exact number. But see if, for example, Turkey invades Iraq or invades Syria, and well, there's no consequences. And of course, NATO doesn't involve because it's Turkey fighting in one of its neighbor's countries, okay? So if it attacks Israel, okay, and Israel strikes back conventionally, okay, NATO would probably stay out of it. But if Israel was to nuke Turkey, the other NATO nations would be obliged to come in on the side of Turkey.
Got it. We'll see.
Because that's different. That's a whole different class of war there.
I agree.
So in other words, what I'm saying is Israel will not have the right to nuke Turkey, and Turkey knows this.
Well, Turkey's a NATO member. That's interesting as well.
Right.
Israel is not.
Yeah. Right, right. So it'd be a non-NATO nation, Israel, nuking a NATO nation, Turkey.
Yeah.
Not only that, but a NATO nation that has nukes stored there. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's unacceptable to NATO, for Israel to nuke them. Okay. So this is why Turkey's saying this. Is because it's not the same as an Arab nation saying it, okay? So, and if you'll notice, Turkey would like to get out of NATO. I'm suspecting Turkey's staying in to pull this off, okay? Another thing Turkey's doing is they're talking with Syria and Russia to solve their issues on the between Syria and Turkey. Mm-hmm. They want to make peace because Turkey isn't on Israel's side. They don't want to be on Israel's side, and the Kurds in Syria have rebelled against the Turkish government. So the Turkish government has no excuse to protect its Kurds, mm-hmm. okay? And, mm-hmm. which is what the beef is that Turkey has with Syria. Syria mm-hmm. would be glad to outlaw the YPG for Turkey, okay? Because the YPG are whores; they're working for the United States right now, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
So, listen, things are just going to get more and more messed up,
Mitch,
you know?
I have
Let's
a question.
Just put it that way, yeah. Yes.
In Sirleaf, the U.S. air base in Turkey has, let's just say for round numbers' sake, 50 American gravity nuclear bombs at that base.
Right.
Are those bombs being held there by Turkish military threats, leave them there so Turkey has security? Or could the U.S. pull them out at any time? You follow what I'm
saying? Well, the U.S. could pull them out, but it's not a part of a Turkish-U.S. plan. It's a part of a U.S.-NATO plan. So NATO has got nuclear bombs stationed for American aircraft, because we have F-16s that can carry them at Incirlik. So we have them stationed at Incirlik in Turkey. We've got them stationed at Aviano in Italy. We've got them stationed at a base in Belgium, okay? So, and we've got them in England, too, I think. So we've got them in, like, four or five countries in Europe. But that is a NATO agreement. That is not just – it is with those countries' permission, but it's not just them. Okay, and they're kind of, you know, they're back in the day, the bombs in Turkey were considered very important because it's a very short flight path from Incirlik into Russia. So that was the great advantage of that, having them stationed there. So it's something that we want. Okay, so.
I have another question. Do you foresee any real effort to militarily try to destroy Russia by the West, by the lunatics in D.C.? Do you think that they would ever really try that?
Yes, they would. They want to break Russia up into smaller countries that they can manage. Okay, eventually they want to break China up also. Okay, listen, the United States and NATO want to rule the world. They want to rule it all.
I can't see it.
They want to tell everybody how to live, what to do.
Right.
Okay, that's what this is all about. It's like Joe Biden got up there just a month ago and said his mind is perfectly okay. Like, golly, he's running the world, he says, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he's doing a bad job of it, you know. Somebody should clue him in on that. If he's running the world is a mess right now.
He's
on the brink of thermonuclear war.
He may even be more dead than alive.
I'm being facetious about the whole thing. So, anyway, see, that's the past six weeks or so, I've really been talking, 6 or 7 weeks, I've really been talking about strategic intelligence because I wanted people to have an understanding of if you follow the U.S. news, you're never going to see World War III coming, okay? You're never going to understand, like, even if you do follow the U.S. news, when we say, oh, we're going to do this to Russia, we're going to do that to Russia, well, that doesn't mean anything on its own. But if you do understand Russia, and that's what I tried to make people understand, then you'll know just how far Russia, you'll know what Russia's true red lines are, things that they absolutely will not stand for. Okay. So,
stood for a lot. Stood down for a lot. They have had many red lines mocked and stomped on, and they have not come back with what I would call an expected intensity of response. They just haven't. They're still farting around, they're still messing around in Ukraine. They will not win that war. They're still, if you look at the original line of contact all up and down the Donbass, the lines are still fairly reasonably where they were 2 years ago. There's nothing much has changed. Mm-hmm. Oh, they change. They pick up a village here, a little town there, and then all go. Okay, I get it.
Yeah, it's insignificant. It really
But what the hell are they doing? Putin has sacrificed over 50,000 Russian young men, boys, troops, and God knows how many wounded.
Remember what my last report was? My last report was about the world war that's going on. Not the war in Ukraine, but the world war that's going on right now.
Right.
It's a world economic war, and Russia is winning that war.
Yes.
Russia is making great strides in winning that war. Listen, Russia will never be left alone and will never be secure as long as the dollar is the reserve currency of the world and the petrodollar is what's used to buy off you. Russia will never be secure as long as that exists. Okay, so if they can get rid of the dollar, guess what? The sanctions don't matter. In a way, the sanctions don't matter anyway because it hasn't hurt Russia. It's hurt the West very bad, but it hasn't hurt Russia. But the very fact that what we do against them in this economic war actually hurts us is like a great advantage to Russia. And Russia could not be making this economic advancement in the economic war if they play their hand too strongly in Ukraine, okay? Because they have to keep all these people on board and all these other countries and stuff. So they have to be responsible and act responsibly and stuff. But let me assure you this, Jeff. If it looks like Ukraine, if they even has a chance of looking like Ukraine may fall to the West into NATO, okay, it will be a nuclear war. If Iran or Syria falls to Israel and the United States, it will be a nuclear war. They will not allow that to happen. Period, period, period. That is the true red line, okay? So all the other red lines don't really matter. That's the red line that matters. They will not lose their southern flank. They have NATO to the west, to the east, to the north. They will not stand for NATO being to the south. There is no way that would be death to Russia, and they're not going to allow that to happen. So that's where it's going. They're doing fine in the economic war. So you know they're sitting there. Why spend your if they go into that right now the casualty rate is about right. There's about 10 Ukrainians buying for each Russian. And in a defensive position, that's right. If they start losing more in the defensive position than they are right now, then that would be a different story. But everything is appropriate and correct. They're losing the right amount of men for the situation that they're in. Okay, they're making the Ukrainians bleed 10 times as bad as they are. And above all, the United States is pouring an immense amount of money, and Europe is paying an immense amount of money into Ukraine. Okay, and this helps Russia in the end. It's not hurting them militarily. It helps them economically, though, for this to happen. So,
got it.
So everything's going as saying. So anyways, when I was talking about this strategic thing, that's what I want people to understand, is where the line will be drawn by Korea, by Iran, by Russia, by China, by all these countries, okay? And so now I want to go back to your intelligence for you personally on the battlefield, what you need to know. So the first thing is strategic intelligence to find out when you're going to run, okay? Technical intelligence is what you need when you're on the run, okay? So technical intelligence is knowing about your opponent's weapons and their capabilities. It is also understanding the capabilities of your weapons in comparison. Both humans and weapons have sensors used for target acquisitions. In other words, how to detect you and shoot you. Here I will give you some basics, but you really should do some exhaustive research on your own. The more you know, the better decisions and plans you can make. So basic weapons. I'm just going to discuss firearms here. Anything can be a weapon, from blunt instruments to edged weapons, from firearms to explosives. I will discuss the rifles because just as you do not want to take a knife to a pistol fight, you do not want to take a pistol to a rifle fight. The three types of rifles I will discuss are the assault rifle, the main battle rifle, and the sniper rifle. These are a matter of both power and range. Just like in a fist fight, reach has an advantage in a fight. The assault rifle has the shortest reach, and the sniper rifle has the longest reach. There are many firearms experts that may not agree with what I am saying here, but you are not likely to have time to become a firearms expert if you are not already one. My goal is to keep this simple and clear so that you understand the distinctions. When I discuss assault rifles and main battle rifles, I will be discussing the civilian models of them, which are semi-automatic rifles. A true assault rifle is usually a select fire weapon that fires both semi-automatic and automatic. Semi-automatic basically means one shot per trigger pull. Exceptions to this are rifles with binary triggers that fire once when you pull the trigger and again when you release the trigger. Also, bump stocks allow for what appears to be automatic fire, but it is really an external device that allows automatic fire without changing any of the internal mechanisms of the semi-automatic rifle. Most main battle rifles also have select fire. I will be discussing the purely semi-automatic versions because that is what most people have. To fully understand the differences in usage and comparison in strengths of these rifles, I need to start with comparison of ammunition. Power or force is a function of mass times velocity. This force is measured in foot-pounds. The more force, the more penetration through a body or a covering material. I can attest to how anxious it makes you feel when a high-powered weapon is chewing up the cover to get at you. Even in a trench, an enemy machine gun can dig the forward wall of your trench down and shrink the height of your cover. The machine gunner is trying to get you so low under your cover that you cannot get any lower. All cover can be degraded, and the more force the bullet has, the greater ability it has to do this. So I've been there, I've experienced that. They just shoot and dig the trench away from you, basically. So ammunition. So let's go with the most popular round, the 5.56x45mm NATO, which is a 223, used in most of the M4 AR-15 type.
I don't know but some rifles can shoot both. Some can't, I'm told. I don't really understand that. Maybe you can clarify that. I mean,
I will be getting to that. I think I'm going to be discussing that. So the 5.56, which is very popular in the United States, the two most prominent assault weapons are the AK and the AR-14. So the caliber of the AR-15 is 5.56 times 45, and basically the force is the same with the 223. Okay, the 7.62 times 39 is the Russian, the Warsaw Pact van. So at 300 yards, the 5.56 has a force of 564 foot-pounds. At 300 rounds, the Soviet, the 7.62 times 39, has a force of 643 foot-pounds. So it's a little bit more powerful. At 500 feet, the 5.56 only has 269 foot-pounds of force, while the AK-47 has 367 foot-pounds of force. Now, here's the distinction that I want to make for you, okay? So the assault rifle, 5.56, at 300 yards has 564 foot-pounds. The 7.62 times 51 millimeter NATO round, a 308 basically, for the main battle rifle, it has at 300 yards 1,758 foot-pounds of force. That is three times more power than an assault rifle has.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, at 500 yards, okay, the NATO 7.62 bullet has 1,226 foot-pounds of force. That's still twice as much at 500 yards than AR-15 has at 300 yards. Okay, it actually is more like five times as much power at 500 yards than the AR-15 has, okay? So that's the real significant thing there. And I want to bring that up because the 7.62 times 51 NATO round is also a sniper rifle round, okay?
And it's a 308.
It's a 308. Yeah, it has the same thing. Now they do have rifles out there, sniper rifles in the 338 Lapua. Those are very expensive rounds. They're like $10 a round, and their millimeter is 8.58 times 70 millimeter. So it is a bigger bullet, and their force at 300 yards is 3,351 foot-pounds, which is almost twice what the 7.62. But then some people have 50 caliber BMG sniper rifles. And that round is a 13 times 100 millimeter round, and it has 10,889 foot-pounds of force at 300 yards, and at 500 still has 9,538 foot-pounds, which is three times more than the Lapua sniper rifle has. So it's a powerful weapon, okay? So generally, assault rifles are for close-in fighting with effective range of about 300 yards. Main battle rifles were for general combat with an effective range out to about 500 yards. Sniper rifles have effective ranges beyond 500 yards. In other words, if you have a main battle rifle, you have more firepower and more reach than someone with an assault rifle. Okay, now keep in mind that the main battle rifle and the assault rifle are generally both semi-automatic rifles. They have the same cyclic rate of fire. Okay, magazine fed. I mean, it's just one that's just a more powerful gun. Now, this is now the technical intelligence is to know what your enemy has and compare it to what you got. Okay, so that's what we're doing here. So sniper rifles are not for general combat, but they have greater reach than other weapons. Sniper rifles can be bolt action, or they can be semi-automatic. However, half of rifles owned are bolt actions, including many old military-type bolt actions. They are accurate and rugged guns, so do not underestimate them. Below is a breakdown of how many of these rifles are in the United States by types. So bolt-action rifles, there's 46 million. Semi-automatic hunting rifles, that's the same caliber, are 22 million, and military-style semi-auto rifles are 23 million. So there's about half and half bolt action and semi-auto rifles that are high powered.
Hell of a lot of sniper rifles in this country, more than I'd have guessed.
Yes, they are. Okay. So right. Because people hunt, tantamount
a sniper
to
rifle.
Sniper rifles. Okay,
yeah.
Right, exactly.
Okay, Remington makes a 700 that is a standard. You want to recommend a bolt-action rifle? And they only have five-round magazines most part.
Yeah, I've got I'm going to talk about that specific rifle. That is actually a good sniper rifle right there.
All right.
So the difference between military rifles and civilian rifles is how much use they are built for. I once had a Remington semi-automatic model 742 308 caliber rifle. It was trashed after 8,000 rounds were shot through it. 8,000 rounds. For a civilian rifle, that is intended to be years of use, but I used it a lot more. At the time, I was on the Army Marksmanship Training Unit at Fort Bliss. I fired 8,000 rounds per day through an FN M60 light machine gun. I would fire 8,000 rounds a week through an M14 rifle, and they did not break on me. Civilian rifles are built to be baby. Military rifles are built to be constantly abused. So when you're looking at the enemy, just keep the enemy's weapons. Just keep in mind that his civilian weapons are not as durable as your military weapons of equal power are worth. Okay. So the effective range is not just about reach compared to other rifles. You should also look at it as running time. Classically, hit and run tactics are how you take less risk with your life when fighting an opponent. You are avoiding giving your opponent an opportunity to kill you. The longer the distance that you engage your opponent from, the more of a distance you have in a running head start. 500 yards gives you a substantial head start if you are running. So the least heavily armed states, this is intelligence for people depending on what state you live in, the least heavily armed states are New Jersey and Hawaii, where less than 1 out of 10 persons are armed. Okay, the most heavily armed state is Montana, where at least 6 out of 10 people are armed. Below that are Alaska, Iowa, Wyoming, North Dakota, South Dakota, Oklahoma, Arkansas, West Virginia, Mississippi, and Alabama, where at least 5 out of 10 people are armed. Okay, so if you're in New Jersey and you're armed, you've got a jump over 90% of the people. Okay. So the most common assault type rifles are the AR-15 platform and the AK-47 platform. The AK-47 has slightly more powerful round and is very reliable, but less accurate than the AR-15. The AR-15 is more accurate, but more prone to jamming. A jam at a critical time can be lethal. I have reduced jamming by firing 223 caliber in AR-15s chambered for 223 and 5.56 millimeter in ARs chambered for 5.56. The rifles stamped 5.56 has a longer chamber than one stamped 223. The 5.56 millimeter chamber is 0.125 inches longer. Also, 223 rounds produce 55,000 pounds per square inch of pressure, while the 5.56 produces 58,000 pounds per square inch of pressure. It is better to shoot 223 caliber in a 5.56 rifles than to fire a 5.56 millimeter in 223 rifles. Okay, so what I'm saying here is if you have an AR-15 and it's stamped with a 5.56, you're okay firing 5.56 or 223 in it. But if you have a 223, you're more likely to have jams if you fire 5.56 millimeter rounds in it.
Well, okay. Now remember, rifles will have stamped on them what caliber round they're supposed to have. And right. I know in the AK platform, 5.56 and 223 are perfectly interchangeable. Zastava made an AK and they chambered it for NATO rounds 223 5.56.
Yes, I saw that. Yeah,
and
they do have that.
Excellent, and they're totally interchangeable. And there were Zastava AKs that were actually had a mag well that was designed to use AR mags. Those are hard to find, but they're out there.
Yeah, sure. So let me move on to main battle rifles. The most common main battle rifles are listed below in order of increasing effective range. So we'll start with the SETMI, made in Spain. And most of these are 7.62 millimeter NATO rounds, okay? And that has effective range of 400. The FNFAL, Belgium, 400 yards. The M1 Garand, which is a 30-06 instead of a 7.62, it's got an effective range of 500. M14 from the United States, which has got a effective range of 500. The G3 HK91 from Germany is 550 yards effective. The FN Scar Heavy, Belgian, rifle is 660 yards heavy, and the L1A1 SLR from the United Kingdom has an effective range of 870 yards. Okay, so
that's a long throw. That's a long way.
Yeah. So I like the M14 or M1A1, the semi-automatic model, for its raw power and accuracy. I love the L1A1 SLR for its effective range. But I love the FN Scar Heavy as the best all-around, most comfortable battle rifle I have used. Okay. And FN Fabrique Nationale makes excellent weapons. They're like the Mercedes-Benz of weapons. Okay, so...
Got it.
You know, so in listing these, I'm encouraging people to also go on the Internet and learn what your rifles look like. I mean, it's going to be hard to tell what your enemy has if you're just looking through binoculars, unless you can identify them by looking at them, okay? It's kind of important to learn what they look like so you know what they can do. If you are in a defensive, so I'm going to talk now about target acquisition technology, and it's important you understand it also. If you are in a defensive position trying to rest and prepare for your next movement, you will need early alarm that an enemy is coming towards you. These are listening posts, or LPs, observation posts, OPs, and security patrols. If you are in the offense, you send out raid and ambush patrols to destroy your opponent with a hasty attack, or reconnaissance patrols to locate and gather information for a deliberate attack. This can be accomplished by using your natural senses of hearing, vision, and even smell. Or you and your enemy can enhance and amplify your hearing and vision with technology. Smelling can be enhanced and amplified by tracking dogs. Okay. Hearing can be enhanced both passively and actively. Passive hearing amplification consists of setting out objects that make noise when people encounter them. This can be cans tied to a tripwire with pebbles in them that work as an alarm. You cannot hear them walking, but when they trip your noisemakers, you will know where they are. You can be creative here. On hard surfaces,
what's a noisemaker,
Mitch?
Mitch, excuse me. What's a noisemaker? Yeah. Is that one of the 12-gauge shells with a tripwire?
Well, you can use those. They have all kinds of things that make noise.
Right.
Okay, hooked to tripwires. And what they do is just alert you that somebody's coming. Okay, you can set out glass on a hard surface, so when they walk on the glass, it makes a louder noise and gives their position away. Keep in mind that when your opponent runs into these, he knows that you are also nearby, okay? So the most used active sound amplification system is the dog. While the human range of hearing is from 20 to 20,000 hertz, the dog's range is 40 to 60,000 hertz. Dogs can hear twice as many frequencies as humans, and dogs can hear four times further away than humans can. They can locate the source of the sound.
Right.
So in modern times, you can amplify your hearing with sound amplifying equipment, such as the action ear that hunters use to hear game on the hunt. These devices are inexpensive. While a dog can alert you to the presence of others, their barking also alerts others to your presence. Of course, the action ear does not bark. Another possibility for the tech savvy is electronic listening devices placed out around your perimeter. I have seen these for as little as $500 and as much as $50,000. They have microphones that you can place out around your perimeter that can detect a sound 1,000 feet away and transmit it back to a receiver. A listening post is something that you hide along the likely avenues of approach into your camp. It is camouflaged and manned by people. Giving the listening post people equipment to enhance their hearing is a plus. Okay, so vision can also be passively enhanced by using trip flares that illuminate the area when the opponent is when they trip it. You can also use motion sensors that will light an opponent up if they step in front of it. You can use your imagination here. Once again, these passive alarms let the enemy know that you are nearby also. Dogs are also an active vision enhancer. While humans see in the range of 400 to 700 nanometers, dogs see in the range 300 to 700 nanometers. Dogs can detect ultraviolet light that humans cannot see. Most humans use fabric brighteners when they wash clothes. This reflects ultraviolet light. At night in the woods, people wearing clean clothes shine very brightly and really stand out. I mean, to the animals. You're just like a glowing creature out there at nighttime because the ultraviolet light is just radiating off of your clothes. Humans cannot see this shine, but dogs and other animals can. At sports stores and even Walmart, they sell a two-bottle treatment that you can wash your clothes with that will take this ultraviolet shine out of your clothes. Dogs have a wider field of vision than humans, and they can detect motion far better than we can. Although dogs cannot see into the infrared spectrum, they can detect infrared illuminators in pitch black. You cannot detect this light. Dogs can. Now, dogs aren't seeing. They're just detecting it. They can tell when somebody's illuminating you with this this infrared illuminator. Dogs can see 8 times further than humans can at night. They are adapted to seeing prey in low light. Okay? So these are all the pluses of a dog. Okay? The way that we can enhance and amplify our vision in daylight is with binoculars, telescopes, and spotting scopes. You can even use kids' scientific astronomy telescopes to see further in the day. You can have telescopic sights mounted to your rifle to enhance target acquisition and get a better sight picture for long-range shots. Holographic sights, red dot sights, and laser sights are not meant for long range, but are meant to enhance the speed of acquiring your target. They are for close-quarters combat, and they definitely give you an edge. You can also use cameras by using a drone to fly over and do the scouting for you. Of course, when your opponent sees the drone, he knows that you are nearby. You can also place cameras out and have them relay the pictures back to you. These you can hide, and your enemy will not be aware of them. Okay, so at night you can employ night vision equipment. There are many infrared night vision binoculars available that are inexpensive and allow you to see at night. You can wear night vision goggles while moving at night. I've used them hours and hours, years and years. So they're handy. They work. These usually include an infrared illuminator that can help you see in very low light. It's a little switch on the binoculars. You turn it on and it just illuminates in infrared, and then you can see better. Okay, so finally, you can mount a night vision scope to your rifle for night fighting. This gives you a definite edge over someone who does not have one. Finally, there is the king of seeing in the dark, in the fog, in the snow, and in the rain, thermal scope or sight. A thermal sight detects infrared radiation just like the night vision scope, but it is enhanced by a cooled receptor. Humans see visible light, which is the 400 to 700 nanometer range. The visible red light is 620 to 700 nanometers. An infrared light vision scope sees in the range of 700 to 1,000 nanometers. The thermal scope detects light in the range of 3,000 to 14,000 nanometers. The thermoscope is a powerful tool. It is also very expensive. You can buy inexpensive ones that are okay for detecting the presence of someone, but for aiming and hitting them with any accuracy, but not for aiming or hitting them with accuracy. You get what you
okay,
pay
let,
for.
Let me,
you want a good,
hold on. Question,
okay.
Question.
Yes.
Scope, red dot, laser, what do you think? Iron sights?
Well, listen, the benefit to a red dot or a laser or even a holographic sight, they're reflex sights. In other words, you can acquire your target very quickly. You can acquire your target much faster than you could with an iron sight. And
yeah.
Speed and getting the drop on somebody is important in a gunfight, okay?
Yes.
The faster you acquire your target, the better for you, okay? So those are for your AR-15 platforms.
Red dots are a little, they're quicker than scopes. I think you can jump right in.
Yes, they are. Right. I went down a, this is a few years ago. My dad was a retired Border Patrolman, so I went to El Paso to a meeting of retired Border Patrol officers, and they took us down to the Border Patrol range in Santa Teresa, New Mexico, and they had us fire these MP5s, 40 caliber MP5s at the range, and they had holographic sights on them, and I just loved them because wherever you see the target indicator, no matter how you're holding the gun, where you see the target indicator at, that's where the bullet's going to go.
So, getting a quick target,
that's great.
Holographic as opposed to red dot, what's the difference?
I personally think that the holographic is faster. The red dot, we're talking fractions of a second, maybe.
I got
just
it.
To me,
so they're
and it may be different
equals.
For other people, but right. I just feel like I can acquire the target faster with the with the red dot. I have to have better control of my gun. With the holographic, I'll still hit the target even if I don't have good control of my gun. Okay,
I'm not familiar with holographic sights at all.
They're a little bit more expensive, but they're reflex sights. They're meant for quick combat and stuff. Okay, mm-hmm. You acquire a target very quickly with them. The red dot is wonderful. You can acquire a target faster than you possibly could with an iron sight. Okay.
Got it. Yeah.
Of course, point shooting is pretty fast too. But if you practice point shooting, and that's with pistols. Pistols are point shooting weapons. Okay.
In other words, you don't want to overthink it.
With those.
You're saying
you don't want to
overthink it. Point and shoot.
Right. So, but that's with pistols, Jeff. That's not a rifle. Rifle, you really need to aim.
Gotcha.
Okay, because it's a long tube.
Oh,
okay.
For sure.
So, if you want a good thermal scope, I recommend that you get the ones that are not for export. These are obviously the most useful. In other words, you'll see when you buy it, if it says on there that you can't buy it for export, then that's the one that's the best quality that gives you the best optics and stuff, okay? Now, these will see out to 1,000 yards. You can see people walking out there and stuff. They just look, it's sort of like watching the predator look at his prey. You know, you see him in the heat signature. But they're very well-defined and stuff. So, okay. Observation posts are placed a little further out in the theory that your guys can run back to the defensive line. The more tools they have available to spot the enemy when he is at the observation point post, the more information he can gather about the approaching enemy. Good thermal sights can see out 1,000 yards or more at night or in inclement weather. Now let me just emphasize this. The benefit of the thermal sight over the night vision sight is the thermal sight will see in the daytime through fog, through rain, through sandstorms or whatever. Okay, so it's better all-around visibility because the range is so much bigger that it uses to detect heat. Okay, so finally, it is wise to have security patrols. They go out to find an enemy that is trying to sneak up on you. Generally, you would like this patrol to destroy enemy forces that it encounters. But if you don't have enough men to do this, they can move with stealth and give early warning rather than engage. It would be best to destroy the enemy before they get to your area. Technical intelligence is knowing what technology and weapons your enemy has so that you do not underestimate their capabilities. It is better to overestimate it, to underestimate. You do not want to underestimate their capabilities. It is better to overestimate than it is to underestimate. I have discussed that I have discussed what another civilian like you might have. The regular military has many more assets and technologies available to them. Get on the internet and familiarize yourself with as much as you can. Knowledge is power. So let me briefly cover tactical intelligence. This will wrap up my intelligence. And tactical intelligence is for a final wars scenario is aimed mostly at armed civilian groups and criminal gangs. Mm-hmm. Tactical intelligence is combat intelligence. It is gathering information about your enemy so you can attack them or avoid them attacking you. In the Army, they teach every soldier the acronym SALUTE, which is a guide to collecting intelligence on your opponents. So the S means size. Report the number of enemy personnel you see and the numbers and kinds of vehicles. After a general collapse of the world economy, fuel will likely be exhausted within days or weeks. Consequently, there will not be many vehicles running around. The Mad Max scenarios are entertaining but unrealistic. Record exact numbers, not generalizations or groupings. Activity. Report what you see the enemy doing. Are they digging in? Are they taking down the camp to prepare for a move? Are they preparing weapons and equipment to go on the offensive? L, location. Where are they? Give the most accurate location either by grid coordinates or by distance from obvious landmarks. This includes roads and mile markers, if you must. Okay. Unit. This is essential if they are military units. Shoulder patches can tell you what unit they are, and the bumpers of American military vehicles have the unit stenciled on the bumper. This is important information if you are dealing with Army or National Guard units. Look on the internet to see what units are in your state's National Guard. Learn the patches that they use and the names of those outfits. In the United States, most National Guard units are combat arms units, like infantry, artillery, armor, cavalry, combat engineers, or military police. Most Army Reserve units are combat support and service support and are unlikely to be used to search for you or attack you. If you have a regular Army base nearby, learn what units are stationed there and what kind of troops they are. If there are criminal gangs in your area, try to learn about them before civilization collapses. The History Channel made a series called Gangland. They give you a general idea about the organization and culture of these gangs in general. In general, right. You would not want to be under the rule or control, their rule or control. My best friend from high school was a biker when he got out of the Army. When I was going to college on the GI Bill, I lived with this friend and I partied with them on the weekend. During the week, I had classes, so I went to bed early. But they were respectful because I was a friend and because they understood that I was not a member and was not subject to initiation. We got into many bar fights on the weekend, and I had their back and they had mine. Two key features of any gang are showing appropriate respect and intense loyalty to the other members and accepted friends. I never got any guff from them. My advice is to avoid them at all costs. They live in a different world than you do, but try and find out how they are organized and what kind of criminal activity they prefer. Biker gangs have colors that identify them, and gangs have tattoos that identify them. All this information is on the internet, so learn what criminal and biker gangs operate in your area and how to tell them apart. They are very territorial. Turf is important to them. I have dealt with them all my life. Do not fear them. Just be wary of them. Your head is not where their head is at, so there is no point in dealing with them if you can avoid it. If you are confronted by them and are badly outnumbered, be respectful but not submissive. Look for a common cause to be allied with them. My father taught me, if you can't beat them, join them. It was solid advice.
Okay? Oh, good advice. Yes.
So time. Report the exact time you saw them at the location. People move. Equipment. Report the equipment that your enemy is using. What kind of firearms do they have? What kind of optics do they have? Be as precise as you can. Also make a note of what kind of vehicles they have. As the situation develops over time, vehicles will become less important because of the lack of fuel. If everyone in your group collects this information and you can compare and collate it to get a better picture of the enemy that you must confront. In an end of civilization scenario, you are not going to want to attack because you will lose people, and that lessens your long-term survival chances. You are trying to survive, not to conquer some turf. Remember, you always want as much information about any threats in your area as you can get. If you see your enemy packing up camp and sending scouts in your directions, try to move laterally from the axis of advance in such a way that you do not have to cross any open terrain or go into any valleys where they can spot and attack you from the high ground. A militarily trained and experienced unit will form a group to attack you. One group will usually have a fire team that suppresses you and a maneuver team that will turn your flank. That is how all militaries have fought since the beginning of civilization, because it works. If you see two distinct groups form, that usually indicates that they intend to envelop you. Three large groups forming indicates a double envelopment that they're attempting to do it. Okay.
Got it. All right. Well, very good. So, we have to wrap it up, Mitch. Go ahead. You got 20 seconds.
No, that's it.
All right. Again, your choice for a 308 durable. What's your call?
I would go with the FN SCAR Heavy. They make a SCAR light that's a 5.56. I wouldn't bother with that. I'd go with the SCAR.
Do we
SCAR
want to
heavy.
Get something built in America for parts?
Well, actually, the FN SCARs are made in America. And here's my advice on this. If it's a weapon that the military uses, I would go with that for two reasons. Because there's lots of ammunition for it, and because there's spare parts. So
right,
special forces
good.
Use it, or special units, forces units, a lot of them use the FN SCAR Heavy. They love them, so.
Okay. All right.
You know.
Very good. Thank you, as always. Talk to you
You're
soon.
Welcome.
Very helpful
okay.
all the way. Okay. Good night, Mitch. All right, and good night to all of you. Back with you tomorrow on Tuesday. Take care. Thanks for being here.